ask one more time, is there anyone here that is in favor of the application and would like to speak before council? Okay, hearing none. At this time, is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition to this application before council? Okay. If you can come on up, I guess we'll take you one at a time. I would ask that you, when you come up, you state your name and address for the record.
And sign in.
I believe the sign-in sheet is up at the podium. And because there are several of you that would like to speak, we'd ask that you avoid being repetitive. There's nothing wrong with saying, I agree with what so-and-so before me just said, and moving on. So.
Yes, before I start, my voice may break up. I've had open heart surgery, so I'm going to try to make my speech as clear as I possibly can. I'm a little confused by something that the applicant stated today in relation to the number of cars that would be traveling these roads. I know when he testified before planning and zoning, he stated that the hotels and restaurants would be full, and he would be able to provide buses back and forth or shuttle service back and forth to the hotels to minimize the traffic. So I'm a little confused there. Also, I'm fortunate enough to live 30 feet off that farm, and I am going to be looking at a stage. The purpose of my correspondence is to share our concerns related to the conditional use being considered. Routine observation of our neighborhood is not that we live in nowhere land, but it's definitely a neighborhood where you see people walking their dogs, riding their bikes, kids playing. The events being proposed will undoubtedly disrupt our everyday lives and potentially create a hazardous situation. Agricultural is defined by the Farmland Assessment Act of 1968, Delaware, or by the National Agricultural Statistics Service of 1968, as all forms of farming, including but not limited to agriculture, horticulture, forestry, aquaculture, or silviculture. I know when we have 15 acres there, when we bought that land before we built our home, we knew that according to the laws of Delaware, we could not subdivide that land, or we were very restricted as to what our land use was. So we built our home, and we absolutely love it. Our region is classified as agricultural residential, which means residents live in an area where farmers and homeowners respect the lifestyle of each other. When we moved to Delaware, we developed a great appreciation, the quiet atmosphere, and the wonderful open spaces. This tranquil lifestyle will be violated with the proposed land use. The five described yearly events, now understanding, according to what the applicant just stated, will start on a Wednesday and end on a Monday. That's the first time I heard that. We're also, so many people are focusing on the festival that they're not realizing that he can bring a circus in there. If he brings a circus in there, there's a whole, now you're talking about animals, you're talking about something totally different than a music festival. The five described yearly events with the accompanying daily vehicles will dramatically impact on our quality of life. This area cannot handle the impact of that number. When considering the noise, the trash, the traffic flows, temporary population, camping, RVs, tents, campfires, grilling, food preparation, sanitary conditions, criminal activities, trespassing, water facilities, medical facilities, etc. It is clear that this region cannot handle the impact of this event. Also of concern will be the ability of police, fire, and emergency service to respond to any difficulties. While the tenant proposes assurances on the land to be used, what provisions have been made for the neighboring properties? What insurances will be provided to the surrounding properties, such as trespassing, damage, parking, blocking driveways, disorderly conduct, crime, damage, theft? Insurance should be secured for the benefit of all potentially affected residences. A recommendation of at least $100 million to be held in escrow for the duration of the contract. I'm going to flip to the back. The applicant has stated there is an alternative venue for the project, the fairgrounds at Harrington. Today is Children's Day at the circus. There's a circus there. Mr. Urban will be there tonight. That's a country western program. And it's set up for this type of venue. It's such a shame to take a beautiful residential area and turn it into a circus. The applicant stated that he is connected to the fairgrounds in Harrington if he desires. We ask that you hear what we have to say and follow the zoning consistency standard for a use permit that say the following. The zoning consistency standard for a use permit, that being to obtain a use permit, the applicant must generally show that the contemplated use is compatible with the policies in terms of the zoning ordinances, and that such use would be essential or desirable to the public convenience or welfare, and will not impair the integrity and character of the zoned district or be detrimental to the public health, safety, morals, or welfare. And that's O'Hagan versus the Board of Zoning Adjustment, 1971. I just want to share a little story with you. And it was really interesting because I was sitting in my cardiologist's office and I opened a book. And when I opened the book, this is what I saw. It was in Delaware Beach Life issue, May 2014. I'm not going to quote the entire article, but I'll share a small segment of it. Mr. and Mrs. Deaver moved to Delaware in the mid-1990s to a home on Plantation Road between Lewis and Rehoboth Beach, where they fell in love with the freedom that they found here. They had a big yard. No one told them what kind of flowers or trees to plant. Soon after moving there, she found out that the secluded country life that she and her husband loved was under threat. The owner of a farm near their property was requesting that it be rezoned to allow commercial development. We were just getting settled in. We were looking forward to living here for a long time. And we thought, oh no, there goes our peace and quiet. She and her neighbors put their case together, presented it to the county's Planning and Zoning Commission, and then to the county council. Despite their efforts, the rezoning was approved unanimously. I was enraged, she said. I just felt that we were not given a fair shake, that no one listened to us. We really put together a nice presentation, and it had no effect on anything at all. No one had any interest on what we had to say. Losing was one thing, but adding insult to injury, no matter what we did, getting signatures, writing letters, it wasn't going to matter. In all due respect, I feel that there's a conflict of interest and a bias here. I feel Mrs. Deaver should recuse herself from this vote. And there is a saying, not in my backyard, but it's okay in yours.
Would you explain that, please?
Well, what you're saying is that you were so enraged when this came about that you had no confidence in county council. You had no confidence.
I understand that.
But I don't know about that. What I'm saying is I take county council seriously. I was vice president of the Republican Women's Club. I was legislative chair. I sat in this council chamber for years, went back, reported on what was going on in Sussex County. And I do feel that you will give us a fair shake. And that was the whole purpose. Okay? Thank you.
May I make a statement, please? I was a private citizen at that time.
I know.
I represent all of you right now. That's a totally different role. And I have a great deal of respect for that.
Okay. I have respect for this council. And as long as I don't live in Independence. Independence is a wonderful group of people who live very close to this venue. And you're going to be hearing from some professional people speaking about some different things. So please just listen. Thank you.
Ma'am.
Did you sign in?
I did. Okay. We all signed in.
Hey, could you just state your name for the record so we have that?
I'm sorry,
thank
you. I thought I did. It's Trudy Bilotti. I live at 22988 Lawson Road, Georgetown, Delaware.
Thank you so much. Is there someone else who would like to speak in opposition?
Just right at the end there.
Hi, my name is Sandy Campbell Nelson, and I am talking on behalf of the Swan Creek Tax Ditch, which is exactly 160 feet from the opening of his day parking on Avalon Road. I am the secretary, and I'm talking on behalf of our chairman, Henry Johnson, and our manager, who is Kenneth Dolan II, who couldn't be here today. The Swan Creek Tax Ditch runs into Indian River watershed, and we have a lot to deal with there. It's 3.9 feet long, and as I said, it runs into the Indian Water Watershed. On the property of the Baker Farm, they have, pardon me with my notes here, Herring Creek, which dumps into Simpler Branch Watershed, that in turn feeds Millsboro Pond. So this is a more far-reaching environmental impact than just across the street from the Baker Farm. There is a culvert that runs from the Baker Farm that's 460 feet from this same opening, gravel road, that goes into a county ditch that in turn goes into the Swan Creek Tax Ditch. Okay? Our concern is with the day camping that the applicant is proposing. I don't know if you've all been camping or been to a camp arena, but a lot of times when it's time to go, people dump and run, if you understand what I mean. Okay, so we're talking pollutants on the ground, and the applicant, in anything that he submitted that I've seen in the package, doesn't specify how he's going to control that. How's he going to control water dump from vendors, you know, hot dog stands, so forth, dump it on the ground? How is that all going to be controlled? Okay, the thing that concerns me and the other officers of the tax ditch are there are no specifics that the applicant has put forward. Now, again, the number one thing I have here is on tree removal. Mr. Baker addressed it and said it was highly exaggerated. But if you turn to attachment 4, that's an actual copy of the lease where it talks about timber removal. It doesn't specify. We thin the trees, we do this, we do that. He says the applicant has the right to cut down timber and prosper from it. Well, how many? If you cut down the trees along Avalon Road or around Hollyville Road, a standard tree holds 200 gallons of water. Where's that going to run off to? A tax ditch? We need to know these answers, okay? Not let me defer it to somebody else. We need to know these answers, okay? And Hollyville Road has a culvert that runs into the tax ditch, as well as Mount Joy, okay? As well as Zor Road. And this year alone, Zor Road and Hollyville both had culverts collapse because of excessive runoff from snow melt and rain. Okay, these are things that DLDOT hasn't passed on to you, but you can confirm it with DLDOT. Okay, these are major concerns to us as far as the tax is concerned. Now, I'm not going to go on and on and on about stuff, but everything in here in my handout, from construction of the roads, crush and run gravel, what's going to assure it's not going to get kicked into the tax ditch? Again, the opening of that ditch is 160 feet from that gravel road. Okay? Somebody goes peeling wheels in or out. Is it going to shoot across the street? What? We don't know. We have no specifics. Finally, two things I want to ask. Item number four in my application here is expansion option. Paragraph 20 of the lease, if you continue to look at copies, says he has the option to lease another 157 acres. What's his application for, 500 or 657 acres? Can we get some specifics? Look at the lease, proof's in front of you. Okay? In closing, I will just say the tax ditch and the county is concerned, or the state is concerned about this. And I just want to know, I looked at Mark Baker's letter, and actually I was going to quote him, but he stole my thunder, so I won't go there. You know, where he says the farm will be 97% the same for the calendar year, because, and according to him, it's 11 days per year that'll be utilized. But, you know, I have to ask, how do you replace a 30-year-old tree that you cut down overnight? How do you keep the flooding and the pollutants out of our watersheds? How do you do that? Somebody give me an answer. Somebody give us an answer for the tax ditch, okay? And all I'm going to say is if you open this Pandora's box, the county and the state will pay the environmental toll because this is far more reaching than the Baker Farm. Thank you. Oh, I didn't get my address. 24131 Brock Street, Georgetown, Delaware.
Good afternoon. I will be very brief. My name is Richard Coyne. I do live in Independence, 23717 Samuel Adams Circle. I want to clarify, Mr. Pyrus's remarks may have left the impression that it is Independence owners who are speaking in opposition to this today. I think the record will show that it is a broad cross-section of citizens of Sussex County who have these concerns. While Independence owners do have concerns, it is not the concern solely of one neighborhood, but of a pretty broad section of the county. Just wanted to make sure that was for the record. Thank you. I'll sign in right now.
Next person who would like to speak in opposition, if there is one.
All right, thank you very much.
Be out of your way in a minute, Willie.
Avalon Woods. I know Avalon Woods.
Thank you. For the record, my name is William Nelson. Everybody calls me Willie Nelson, but I'm the president of Avalon Woods Owners Association, and some of the thunder's already been stolen and everything. I just want to put in correlation where Avalon Woods is at. Avalon Woods is centered directly, I'll step away and point it to you. The entrance to Avalon Woods is right there. 540 feet from the entrance for his day camping. We're extremely concerned about our community being gridlocked and locked into place. And that's exactly what would happen. We would not be able to get in or out of our community for the day specified by the applicant. We have approximately 129 parcels of land or lots in our community. It's a diversified residential population, approximately 250 full-time residents, and then that's not counting our seasonal residents. We have four issues that we would like to discuss, or at least have the council address. First and foremost are the emergency services that are essential to the operations and safety of our community. This includes fire, EMS, and Delaware State Police responses. Again, our community would be gridlocked. DART is used on a daily basis by our disabled citizens. We have several disabled citizens in there. And as the individual from Independence said, it's not only going to affect Avalon Woods. This is far-reaching, okay? So we need to make sure that that's done. The ingress, egress to our community, like I specified, is going to be totally blocked off. How do we get in and out during these events? And we're talking an entire community. Second concern for our community is security.
Mr. Pyers has stated that he will put a fence around his event venue. What is to prevent somebody from getting into our community? That fence is not going to do it. Are we going to have to hire our own security personnel to protect our community? That's not logical to us. We cannot afford that. And as specified, the comprehensive plan, it sounds to me like it's not being followed here. As Ms. Bellotti pointed out, this is a residential agricultural area, okay? And it's not following the comprehensive plan to be doing something like this. Third, our community has two protected wellheads. If you look on your attachment, on the bottom right, on the bottom left, in the upper right-hand corner, there's two dark circles. Those are state-protected wellheads. Well, we do have a grant to add additional security that's pending, but we do not know how long it's going to take. We'd like to put fences up, security lighting, et cetera, et cetera.
On your map?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That is a county map, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hold off your mapping system. Mm-hmm. They are protected wellheads. One of those protected wellheads actually has the perimeter of that on the Baker Farm. So, again, going back to the environmental impact, we're very, very, very concerned about our wells. The runoff, our wells are, if I'm not mistaken, 73 feet deep. So they are going to be very susceptible to groundwater. Third of the conditions and classifications of the rural roadways, they're considered by DLDOT, if I'm not mistaken, as the level 4 rural roads. I'm sure somebody will be addressing more of the traffic issues here shortly. The citizens of Avalon Woods Owners Association request that this proposal be denied because the conditional use application is not in accordance with the comprehensive development plan and does not promote the health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, and welfare of the residents of our community. My address is 24131 Brock Street, Avalon Woods.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition to the application?
If not, it'll be very, very brief. My name is Mike Falkenstein. I live at 24114 Brock Street, Avalon Woods. I just want to point out, as the applicant has mentioned, maybe the Cleavers and Ozzie and Harriet are going to come. But for the most part, we're going to have a bunch of drunken, drug-addled rowdies. Allow me to demonstrate something. The tent camping is right here. Where I live, Mr. Vincent, Mr. Cole, is not much further than where that clock is on that wall. That's how close it's going to be to my back door. I request you deny this application.
Can I get your name again, sir?
Okay. Michael Falkenstein, 24114 Brack Street.
Good afternoon. My name's Tim Ryle. I'm a real estate broker with approximately 25 years experience in real estate, current vice chair and past chair of the Delaware Real Estate Commission Education Committee, the first vice president of the Sussex County Board of Realtors, and I'm also a member of the board of directors for Woodhaven Farms, a rural community subdivision located on Hollyville Road, which consists of approximately 100 residents and is situated within a few hundred feet of the proposed facility. I also reside along with my wife and seven children at 23038 Lawson Road, which is across from the proposed recreational facility. When this application became public, I was asked by various residents if it were possible to calculate the depreciation on a property. if something of this magnitude were to be approved? And my response to that question was no. Typically, one would obtain a certified appraisal, a current one, and once such an operation was established, obtain another certified appraisal to determine the positive or negative financial impact on the resident's property. An example is some homeowners engaged me to sell their property located on Park Avenue outside of Georgetown. It was priced at an average market rate. Soon after that time, the airport was securing land to expand. The homeowner received an offer from officials, but the amount was far short of the marketing price. An independent certified appraisal was completed, and it found that the then current market value supported the list price. Subsequently, the property was purchased for the satisfactory appraised amount. In that case, land acquisition and the change of use was for the greater public good. This is not the case with this application, as it is solely a for-profit enterprise for private individuals. Unfortunately, with this scenario, a determinable decrease in property value would not be realized until after the establishment of use. With the steady growth that has occurred within Sussex County during the past 12 years, no one can readily envision the blighting impact and burden this change of use would foist upon the neighboring properties and their respective residents. With the responsibilities and the knowledge of a real estate professional also comes the awareness of the detrimental effect that this application would have upon the area, as well as a decline in property values, and with that decline, the decrease in stable government revenue. For most people, their home is the largest investment that they will ever make in their lifetime. By allowing this application, it disrupts and thrusts that investment in further decline. Most of the properties that this type of enterprise would affect are in fact already restricted in their use via zoning regulations or indeed restrictions that were placed in the deed when parceled out. There are a myriad of restrictions found in these deeds, many of which are more frequently seen than others. Just a few examples are fences permitted or not permitted, if so, the possible height requirement, number of pets limitation, type of pets allowable, livestock permitted, not permitted, or a limited number of specific animals, or the exclusion of specific types of animals or pets, no clotheslines, no mobile homes, no vehicles with expired tags, and in most all cases, no commercial activity. By default, the current zoning prohibits the use of most of the landowners in this area operating a commercial business activity. It is one thing to have Mr. Smith at 123 Johnson Road to apply for a change of use because he has an economic hardship and requests the quiet use to engage in an activity that provides for his family's needs, and quite another to consider a request of this magnitude, which when making a list of pros and cons has no pros or benefits to anyone currently residing in the area. It not only does not benefit residents, but is an infringement placed upon each resident. In conclusion, I would like to mention the bundle of rights, which is one of the first definitions that a pre-licensee or law school attendee in the scope of real estate learns, is the definition of the bundle of rights. What it entails, along with its importance to a purchaser and the subsequent owner of real estate. The bundle of rights is a right to own real estate and carries with it a traditional bundle of legal rights transferred with the property from seller to buyer. These are the recognized rights of the holder of title to the property and include the right of possession, which is the property is owned by whomever holds title, the right of control, within the laws, the owner controls the use of the property, the right of exclusion, others can be excluded from using or entering the property, the right of enjoyment, the owner can enjoy the use of the property in any legal manner, and the right of disposition, the holder, title holder can sell, rent, or transfer ownership or use the property at will. Therefore, on behalf of myself and my family, I'm requesting that the application for the change of use be denied and that the inherent and fundamental right to enjoy our property be protected by your governing body. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the council. My name is Gary Simone. I reside at 30148 George Washington Avenue in Millsboro, which is a part of the Independence community. Prior to my retirement down here, I was responsible for the worldwide environmental health and safety programs of a major pharmaceutical company. So I feel qualified to speak a little bit about the environmental impacts. Summary of my background is included in the written comments that I provided to the council already. Thank you for the opportunity to provide these comments today. I know you guys have a very difficult job balancing everybody's considerations here. My comments this afternoon will be restricted solely to the potential environmental impacts. I know that I may be redundant in a few of the areas. I apologize for that in advance. For the record, again, the site plan filed by the applicant is virtually silent on any environmental impact except for a brief mention of trash removal and water distribution systems. With all due respect to the property owner, the opinions of what an environmental impact may be or may not be needs to boil down to some empirical data. From what I can see from the public record and from my discussions with state and county authorities, that information has not been generated or it has not been made available to the public. It just simply does not exist. The point's been made at this meeting and also at the Zoning Commission meeting that the applicant has basically provided a business plan, speaks very little to any land use issues. I agree with that comment completely. There have been numerous references made to money losers and break-even points, but that's pretty much it as far as the environmental impacts. I feel they've been trivialized to a certain extent. Now, proposed project is going to encompass approximately between 500 and 1,000 acres of property zoned AR1. Those activities that are planned for the project are tree removal, regrading, and disturbance of vegetative cover, and construction of internal road systems and parking areas. Now, given the general topography and geography of the venue, each one of these actions on their own or in concert with each other have to have an impact of some sort. The degree of that impact is something that the empirical data will point to. More specifically, and as some people have mentioned already, the major specific concerns that need some data clarification that there are two nearby protected wellheads that supply drinking water to the local communities. The potential impacts of water quality on the drawdown and recharging of those groundwater supplies is unknown. Wetlands and other natural habitats located within the venue have yet to be adequately delineated. The stormwater runoff and drainage from the unpaved air or from the constructed road areas will create unacceptable conditions to already flood-prone areas and tax ditches. Potentially endangered or threatened species have yet to be identified. Maybe there are no bald eagles nesting in the area, but as far as any protected or threatened species, I don't believe anyone's really done a really good look-see to see what might be there. And the last, you know, the other public concern is major public health issues. There have been some issues mentioned about trash removal, some sanitary, you know, water supply, and but no one's talked about any specific plans for management of human sanitary sewage. Now, there has simply been no data generated to address these impacts. There's no record of an environmental assessment on file, and except for a brief reference, as I mentioned before, a brief references by the applicant, There has been no data generated. Now, for example, the applicant's presentation before the Zoning and Planning Commission on July 10th, the applicant stated that he liked regulation. Well, then we proceeded with a litany of regulatory agencies, and except for a brief mention today, there was no mention of DENREC, the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Conservation. And anyone who's had any association or dealing with that knows that the kind of hoops that one would have to jump through to get permits, but there are very, very onerous details that have to be considered. My friends have already mentioned the county comprehensive plan. I agree with everything they've said. And there are also a plethora of regulations dealing with the operation of campgrounds in the area. Now, I have a couple of recommendations. Due to the lack of environmental data to evaluate, we request that the council require the applicant at his expense to implement and place in the public record the following before making a final decision on the application. One, perform a formal environmental risk assessment to identify, define, and quantify potential environmental risks posed by the development of this property. Two, propose appropriate and adequate environmental monitoring, prevention, and contingency measures based on the results of the risk assessment. And three, obtain appropriate and adequate instruments such as bonds or insurance to guarantee financial responsibility for the monitoring, mitigating, and or remediating of any harm caused by proposed activities to the environment or to local residents. Now, I'm new to the state of Delaware. I just retired down here in February. And rhetorical question. I'm having trouble grasping why someone would want to develop this beautiful area, peaceful, quiet area, when there's a perfectly acceptable site in Harrington that's already built near roadways that can handle the traffic volume and also set up to handle these types of events. I don't get it. So in conclusion, I appreciate, again, your difficult decision you have to make. When all those factors are weighed, I'm confident that the risks and downsides of this far outweigh the benefits to a few. Again, I respectfully request that the county council deny the application to rezone the venue, which is under consideration. I thank you very much. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak in opposition?
My name is Beverly Morgan, and I live at 23743 Samuel Adams Circle in Millsboro. And I'm here to speak a bit about the difference between music and what becomes noise pollution, depending upon the decibel. I think you have a handout that I've included several resources, because decibels are not something we deal with every day, except what we hear from in our ears. I will say I have been a musician all my life. I've made music all my life. And Mr. Perez is exactly true. Country music is wonderful. It is American music. So are spirituals. They come from America. So are blues and jazz. So when we get swept up in the idea that the national music of America is country music, I think we have to broaden our terminology a bit. So music is music as long as it remains reasonable to our ear. And if you could possibly look at the decibel handout I included. I don't know if this is the place to do it or not. I'm a longtime teacher, so I have lots of resources. So if I've gone too far, you stop me. But this is a music decibel level. And what we find out is that the rustling of trees is at a decibel of about 20. When we speak, it's 50 to 60. Decibels in our home radio sound to us at about 60 to 75. Once we get to 85, it becomes a risk damage to our ears. And if I get louder, you're going to beg me to stop. Well, that's exactly what happens. That's when it becomes noise pollution. And that noise pollution is generally defined as the disturbing or excessive noise caused by humans that may harm the health or welfare of humans or animals. And I speak here as much for animals as for ourselves. Like secondhand smoke, it's the secondhand noise we experience that is produced by other people, put into the environment without our consent, and that has effects on them and on us that we really don't have any control over. Noise pollution, according to our decibel level handout, says that aircraft is between 90 and 140. Decibels of concerts outside, such that Mr. Pires is proposing, go from 110, the softest level, to 130. 85 is damaging. 130 will carry quite an impact. So I would ask you to consider this being a family event. I'm a mom. I'm a grandmother. I'm a great-grandmother. Will I bring my young children to this over 130 decibel concert for their ears to be damaged with? I kind of doubt that the dominance of families coming to this concert will include lots of young children, toddlers, school-aged children. If they're 16 or more, they can drive themselves. It doesn't become a family event at that point. So I would question that. The proposed concert will be between 125 and 130 decibels at all times. The physical effects of noise pollution is documented here. Exposure to sound acts as a stressor, causes changes in blood pressure, can produce chronic health events, effects, and it particularly affects those 65 and older. Many of us here, including myself, are 65 and older. So it really does create adverse conditions. The EPA, Noise Control Act of 1972, created a noise control office, and it was to protect the public health and welfare. That office was stopped in 1984, I believe, or 82, because of staffing and finance. However, the responsibility to create regulations over noise pollution and noise control was passed on to states. And so I refer you to the State of Delaware handout that I've given to you, which is the controls regulating the governing and control of noise. So I would completely disagree with Mr. Pires that he is under regulation of the state and county. These regulations, if you have the handout, if you check the first page, 71-I-2, the scope is as follows. These regulations are to prevent, prohibit, and provide for the abatement of excess and unnecessary noise and or vibration, which may endanger the health, safety, and welfare, jeopardize the value of property, and erode the integrity of the environment of the people of this state. If we look further, intrusiveness of noise, it's section 3.0.17. That's described as unwanted sound which intrudes over and above the existing noise at a given location. I think we can safely say the existing noise, the ambient sound in the country, in the rural area we're talking about, is about 30 decibels without people. This will be intrusive noise. The term night, as described in 3.0.19, is described between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. That means the noise can't continue then. The proposed concert will go at least until 11:30, possibly 12 o'clock, with any other sounds coming from the campsite intruding on the neighborhoods. Noise disturbance, 3.0.21, means any sound which endangers or injures the safety or health of humans or animals, annoys or disturbs a reasonable person of normal sensitivities, or jeopardizes the value of property and voids, erodes the integrity of the environment. So we can say that human-induced noise pollution are many of the factors that lead to the depletion of wildlife in the community, on the woodlands. Laboratory studies and researchers have found that because of the impact of the decibels, animals can be really, really scared by what happens. And I refer you to the physics classroom handout called Intensity and the Decibel Scale. Decibels are measured on a logarithmic scale. So if we go from 20 decibels to 100, we're not increasing it by 80. We're increasing it by 10 to the 10th power. And that's 100 million times. That's the impact of that sound that will happen to any living creature within the threshold of hearing that sound. The Noise Pollution Clearinghouse fact sheet on the noise effects of wildlife, I gave that to you, documents numerous studies with a list of references, far too many to cite here. I would say I hear there are no eagles on the property, and I'm glad of that because they do need to be protected by the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act of 1940. I would like to tell you an interesting aside about noise pollution in animals. Scientists have used this information and turned it against erosive kinds of species. There's a bark beetle that was devastating trees. In order to stop the beetle, they played these loud music of rock bands. It doesn't matter what the band is, by the way. If I'm singing opera at 130 decibels, you're going to tell me to shut up. It's too loud. But so this was the music of Guns N' Roses, Queen. Actually, it was the words of Rush Limbaugh played backwards. Backwards because the scientists couldn't stand hearing it forward. So they played it backwards, and the bark beetles were so disrupted, it disrupted their tunneling. It disrupted their feeding and reproduction habits and at times caused them to kill each other, to literally eat each other. So the effect of noise pollution on insects can be devastating. I'd ask you to turn to page 5 in the state regulations where we see noise disturbance prohibited. The prohibited acts are: no person shall make, continue, or cause to be made or continued any noise disturbance. Specific prohibitions noted in 4.0.2. Number one, musical instruments, automobiles, sound amplifiers, similar devices which produce, reproduce, or amplify sound. If you look at number four regarding construction, that's found on the next page, page six. Construction, operating or permitting the operation of any tools or equipment used in construction, letter B, at any other time such that the sound level within any receiving property exceeds 85 decibels for a period of 1 hour. Power tools used above 85 decibels. Well, our decibel sheet says they're over 100 right off the bat. They're going to be used much longer than a period of 1 hour. It's going to be days until things are put up and taken down. If you look at explosives, this is on page 7, number 7, explosives, fireworks, fire, similar devices. These are explicitly prohibited. Fireworks and other pyrotechnics are often associated with concerts. We don't know if they're going to happen, but they are not regulated. Clearly, these fall outside the range of regulation, according to the state of Delaware, Department of Health and Natural Resources. Number 4.0.3, motor vehicle prohibitions, include standing motor vehicles, that no person shall operate or permit the operation of any motor vehicle or any auxiliary equipment for a period longer than 20 minutes in an hour while the vehicle is stationary. So how are those generators going to run? Generators generate about 100 decibels of sound all the time. A din will be coming very close to Lawson Roads and Avalon Road. Those people are going to be receiving a lot of vibration, a lot of sound for days on end. That's not what they bargained for. That's not why they came here. These regulations are very clear. Page 9 notes the maximum noise and vibration limits within zoning. The zoning we are in is A and B. The limits are 65 decibels and at best 75. I'd also like to say that I found in Country Music News that a Dublin concert promoter was forced to cancel two concerts of Garth Brooks. He's a notorious star. He's wonderful, making a comeback, doing tours everywhere. That was July 3rd of this year. The reason given by City Council, and I quote, "the cumulative effect on residents and on some businesses would lead to an unacceptable level of disruption to their lives and livelihoods." And this concert was to be held in a large sports stadium equipped to hold the concert. Set up for such an event, it wasn't going to be on a pastoral countryside. So the impact of Firefly was a positive economic impact up in Dover. That impact spread down here, according to Mr. Pires, to Rehoboth Beach and to Dewey. Would the same thing not happen were this event held in Harrington? Would we not benefit economically as well if it were held on an appropriate setting? The other thing I want to let you know is, you know, Man of War is a band that's loud, not because of the music, but because they play amplified sound. That's what makes the music loud. They hold the record in the Guinness World Book of Records of 129.5 decibels. That's what people are subject to. Again, I would ask you, will a mother subject her children to this sound? I wouldn't. In closing, I'd like to share with you some words from the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. This is called Protecting the Commons. I won't read everything, just a few things. The commons refer to the air, the land, and the quality of life we're all seeking. Our effort to control secondhand noise is part of a greater effort to protect that which is held in common by the public from exploitation, abuse, and degradation. Some individuals and businesses feel they have a right or the freedom to use a common resource in any way they see fit. Perhaps they don't realize what most of us learned in our schoolyard years, that my right to swing my fist ends at your nose, or that my right to create noise ends at your ear. In any case, these people are acting as our bullies. They're claiming our rights and freedoms that are not theirs while degrading resources that are ours. Polluting the commons is not a right. Our effort to reduce noise pollution is similar to other efforts to reduce pollution and reassert our collective stewardship over the commons. So I ask that, as a good neighbor, Mr. Pyres, take this concert and put it wonderfully where it belongs so we can all enjoy it and none of us be subject to the noise pollution that it will create. I hope that you respond in a way that is beneficial to our communities. Thank you so much.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak? I know we've heard a lot about different types of concerns from opposition, and if you ask that you not be repetitive.
Mr. President, members of the council, my name is Evan Bush. I live at 27175 Avalon Road, Georgetown. I hope that this does not become approved. I think there are better sites in the county and elsewhere. This particular site, I think, would be better suited for mud wrestling. It's in a remote location with family cemeteries. That's not right for an exuberant festival. I have only one copy because my printer ran out of ink, but in the letter I submitted, I did include pictures of the area surrounding that area. May I give it to Mr. Lank?
Please.
Okay. As you may remember, last Tuesday in the evening, there was a 1.5-inch rainfall. Okay. This is a view of some of the surrounding property. I took a picture the next day. I have taken daily pictures. You will see that. And since I had to submit the letter yesterday, that was the last picture. But even today, there is still water standing in the area. The soil maps, which are in the letter, show large areas with poor drainage. This is something that has to be focused on. I have a greater concern, and that's a concern, if I may misuse a legal term, Mr. Sharp, with the due process in this. Mr. Perez did not furnish a preliminary site plan to the Zoning and Hearing Commission in accordance with regulations. I'm not sure if this is indeed in accordance with regulations. I'll address that in a minute. But it would seem the public is not going to have a hearing on a full scope understanding of what this project is about. And that troubles me. I hope if this goes forward that there is indeed another public hearing after, not with 15 minutes, we have a chance to digest what has been presented. I do not know what is in the plans that you have been furnished, but some of the suggestions that the Zoning and Commission had was that it show the laid out of the RVs, that it show sales areas, collection areas, traffic pattern. None of those do I see on this plan. Lastly, my concern is with this process. He did not furnish a site plan to the Zoning and Hearing Commission in accordance with regulations. He, in his list of voluntary contributions, which mainly seemed like they would said I would obey the law, he said that he would pay for special coverage if the attendance was greater than $25,000. Or 25,000 people. Now, that was the first that I heard that he wasn't charging for the event. He wasn't a for-profit corporation, and that all of the profits were going to community organizations. If he is not doing any of those things, then he still has to pay for the charges. But he is entitled to misread policies. I certainly did. I thought Mr. Baker's farm was an agricultural preservation district. I later learned there's a different section of the code which allows him not to pay taxes. When I find myself in a situation like that, where there have been two or three things, I begin to be a little antsy. And from that point on, I start to be very specific and try to be comprehensive in any of my instructions and to think of all possible misinterpretations of those instructions. And to modify a very wise quote of President Reagan, trust but verify. I try to trust but ensure and verify. I'm also concerned with the use of the word attendance. I don't understand that word. The reason I don't understand it goes to one of the events that Mr. Perez talked about, and that is the Fort Laramie, Ohio. Two different papers, the Columbus Chief Executive Officer magazine and the Dayton Daily News, reported different figures. The Columbus CO reported the expected attendance as 70,000. The Dayton Daily News reported it as 20,000 per day. Now, I can reconcile those numbers, but it shows the importance of having it clear what numbers we're talking about. I don't know if this will be my last opportunity to speak. Mr. Perez says that there will be 50 RVs per acre. Looking at other websites of country music festivals, they generally provide a 20 by 30, 20 by 40. I think the max I saw was 20 by 60. Foot space for the RVs. Well, for a campground, I think our code requires 2,000 square feet. The largest of those would be 1,200 square feet. In addition, this shows the screens facing out to the road. Now, this is not a drive-in music theater, but your codes for drive-in music theater would require enough buffing that there is no light pollution. I'm sorry, was I too low? Okay. All right. Lastly, there are comparisons made with Punkin Chunkin, that this is the savior now that Punkin Chunkin is gone. I'd like to note some things. First and foremost, I think there's a significant cost and benefit ratio difference. The profit to Punkin Chunkin went to charities, most of which were local. The profit from this will go to promoters. You didn't note that, but you were concerned about it. Mr. Cole, was held in an off-season. It utilized rather than straining existing resources. Housing for tourists was primarily off-site, contributing to the economy. It was a daytime event, not a nighttime event. It was closer to major highways. There were no significant construction vehicles at Punkin Chunkin. This main stage could be 100 feet by 54 feet tall. There are major safety issues. Several years back, the Indianapolis Fair stage, a temporary stage like this, collapsed, killing 7 people and injuring 40 others. You have a picture in the letter. I've seen the video. It's horrifying. It's worse than any horror movie I've seen. The residential density along the Del Dot routes is lower than the residential density around Baker Farm. Only 0.3% of the land at Punkin Chunkin is classified as poorly trained, and there are no family cemeteries I know of at Punkin Chunkin at the Wheatley Farm. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak in opposition tonight, this afternoon? Huh? We've got a couple people want to come up.
Good afternoon. My name is Nathan Wise. I am also a resident of Independence. I appreciate the opportunity I have today to address all of you. Before moving to Delaware, I was a business management consultant. Previously lived in central Pennsylvania, and how that has bearing on this is that in the many years that I was there, I participated and experienced a somewhat smaller event, but of a similar nature, called the Center County Grange Fair and Encampment. I only mention that to establish some familiarity, and I will refer to that a bit later. So, I'm here to address concerns regarding traffic. Earlier, Mr. Perez sought to minimize our concerns, or the concerns that you would have regarding traffic. And he broke things down into two sections. That would be day traffic and the RV vehicles. I thought it was rather interesting that he said, well, the people with the RVs, they'll come, show up, set up their campsites, and then it's all over, they'll go. Snap of the finger, wham, wave the magic wand, they're here, they're not here. I'm going to address that. I don't think that that's a realistic assessment of the way it's likely to work out. Okay, why are we all here today? Well, we're here because we feel that the events proposed by CU 1991 are going to directly affect us, and it's not just because we're concerned about noise or convenience, although those are concerns. Now, we're really here, I think a lot of us, because we have a fear for our security, our safety, and our well-being. And the primary fear is that the large number of event attendees will create severe traffic congestions on the local and nearby feeder roads that may delay, if not prevent, the timely delivery of emergency fire and medical services. Now, I know other people have expressed that concern. I'm going to zero in on creating a picture of how that will impact the roads. We feel that these concerns are real. They're not only for residents of Avalon Woods, who are in the immediate vicinity, but also residents of Independence, as well as all the communities that are in what I would call the boundary area of feeder routes. Feeder routes I would define as being Route 9, Route 5, Route 24, Route 30 as an example, surrounding, where traffic is being funneled in from outside the area, from 113, Route 1, gradually going from the larger roads, funneling down into the ever smaller arteries. And it isn't just traffic congestion that concerns us, not simply the traffic congestion, but also the length of time that this traffic congestion continues. The applicant has not specified, or not specified up until today, how much time will be required. No limits have been placed on the applicant for setup or takedown times. His attorney did say something in the opening that he thought it might take 4 to 6 weeks. I thought was interesting. I hadn't heard that before. Certainly we'll be concerned with or they'll be concerned with setting up stages, seating, camping facilities, vendor setup and takedown times. And as I said, I think that they could take anywhere from several days, but possibly the many weeks that the attorney had suggested. Camping events will take many days for campers, the RVs, and other vehicles to enter and exit the event site. The applicant expects up to 25,000 attendees, maybe more, maybe not initially, but over time. And as he stated, anticipates that 80 to 90% of those will come in RVs. That's where he was minimizing the daily local traffic. Won't be very high, but it'll come from the RVs. Those people will be on the site. But what about when those RVs arrive? That's what we're going to be talking about. Now, if the county, the planning meeting that was held, he said to anticipate 4,000 to 5,000 RVs. In fact, today I think he said the number could be higher. And he believes, somewhat optimistically, in my opinion, that he can receive them in, inspect them for safety and contraband, 120 RVs per hour. That would be two a minute. Now, in a 10-hour day, that would be about 1,200 RVs entering, and by my calculations, would take at least 4 days to complete. Applicant believes he can bring all the RVs in within a period of 3 days prior to the event opening. By reference, I referred earlier to an event in Pennsylvania, the Center County Grange Fair. This is something that they've been doing for 140 years. And it's an improved site, by the way. All facilities are in there. They handle 12 to 1,500 RVs and 950 platform tenters coming in. And as a reference, they provide 3.5 days to bring everything in before their official opening. So what's that, half what the applicant has proposed he might be bringing in 3.5 days, and he's saying he can do a much larger number in 3 days. So I find it hard to believe that Mr. Perez and company can successfully bring in and inspect, set into the camping slots, the large number of RVs he anticipates in only 3 days. And as I said, a much more experienced, an older event would take 3 days, 3.5 days for half the campers. Whatever time it takes, consider the impact on the local roads. The RVs coming to the proposed event will be entering the site from Hollyville Road. Now, I know earlier Mr. Perez made reference to traffic flows. He referenced Route 9, compared that to what was going to be coming into his site. And I think it's important to consider some differences in the traffic flows. One, Route 9 is a somewhat better road, although it's still only a two-lane road compared to Hollyville Road, which is the entrance road. Route 9 is somewhat wider, has shoulders at points, and traffic flow on Route 9 is moving at, what, 45 to 60 miles per hour, except where they have lights and intersections, but they're moving along. We're talking about traffic flow that's coming along Hollyville Road, and that's the picture that I want you to get and see. The RVs are going to be coming in along this Hollyville Road. It's a two-lane road. At best, you can expect that, since there's only two lanes, they're using both lanes to bring the RVs in. Conceivably, the RVs averaging 35 feet long, I mean, they could be 25 to 50 feet, we'll say 35 feet, will need to quickly and smoothly negotiate the turn from narrow Hollyville Road onto the event roads. They're going to be coming from both directions. And while they are turning in simultaneously from both directions, where's the other traffic going to go? Well, wait a minute. No other traffic can pass when you've got crowds of RVs coming in. Now, am I saying it's always going to be like that? Well, I don't see it. 1,200 a day. Are they going to be spaced out along the day? Queuing theory says no. They're probably all going to jam up at certain times. And at that point, entrance or traffic along Hollyville Road stops. Becomes unusable. So say, for example, you're trying to travel from Millsboro to Lewis. Never mind if you're trying to do that for business or for pleasure. But what about those emergency vehicles we expressed concern about earlier? Hollyville Road is often used instead of taking the longer routes along 24 and Route 5. Even Route 5 and 24 will experience heavier traffic during these events. In the summer season, the emergency vehicles would want to take these back roads, avoiding the much longer and more congested Delaware 1 route, certainly at all costs. Now, can you picture it? RVs are on average of 35 feet long, as I said, and let's say that minimally 5 feet between them while they're moving along. They're not traveling at very high speeds. Okay, that's 40 feet. Even assuming that the applicant can complete bringing the RVs in 3 days, and as you said, that might be 1,200 RVs a day. Well, let's see, that would be a line at least, 48,000 feet if it were continuous, 10 miles, and stretching throughout the day. So it won't be all at once, but if you can picture, we envision that we've got these small roads, local roads, that we're feeding into the site, swallowing the volume of traffic coming from other locations to funnel into his site. Will it be true for all the days of the events? No. It'll be true for the 3 or 4, we're not sure how many days there are, that it's going to take, if you will, to load up his campsites. Ultimately, if event campers who take in multiple events are not restricted, they could potentially leave their RVs and campers at the proposed site all summer. This would effectively result in a 6 or 7 month camping season. We believe that if CU 1991 is approved, the council must place limits on setup and takedown time. Then additionally, council should limit the duration of camper stays to avoid a summer, hesitate to say, RV city on the Baker Farm. The roads defining the boundaries around the site are designated as local roads in the Sussex County plan. And according to the plan I'm quoting here, these roads provide direct access to land and linkages to higher classification routes. Local roads carry the lowest volumes of traffic and relatively short trip lengths and encompass all roads not designated at higher classifications. The immediate boundary roads are not designed to support the traffic volumes generated by large events as envisioned in CU 1991. Additionally, the comprehensive plan recognizes that conflicts with local roads often occur, especially from farm equipment which might be traveling from field to field or from local streets in the small rural subdivisions. Each of these boundary roads provide only 2 lanes, one in each direction. There are no turn lanes. None of these roads have paved shoulders. In most places, the grassy edges are not wide enough for cars to park, no less pass, and they're almost universally lined with drainage ditches. For a reference, the Avalon and Lawson roads are just 20 feet wide. They're probably going to have the smallest volume, of course. Hollyville Road, 22 feet wide, but the other conditions remain. Contrast these local roads not simply to Route 9, which Mr. Perez was referring to, but to Route 113, where they service the Firefly events. There you have a fully paved arterial road that carries 63,000 vehicles per day, talking about 6 lanes, 130 feet wide, with shoulders and no ditches. Harrington Fairgrounds, it's served by 113, another fully paved 88-foot-wide arterial road, 4 lanes, again, shoulders, and no ditches. 113 vehicle per day is about 23,000 normally. Remember, these vehicle per days are normal, average business days. They're not when you've got big events occurring. Clearly, the boundary roads to the event site are inadequate for the anticipated traffic volume. This is readily apparent when you consider the roads necessary to support Firefly, NASCAR races, the Pumpkin Chunkin, and similarly sized events such as are held in Dover and Harrington. In summary, we feel that approval of CU 1991, will result in events which bring thousands of large RV campers and trucks to Avalon and Lawson roads. These roads are only about 20 feet wide. Again, they have no shoulders, and most areas have drainage issues within several feet of the road, which the real point of that is these can cause vehicles that veer off the road or have to move over for some reason to be trapped or readily overturned, in particular if you have RVs, if they go off onto the grassy shoulders. Kind of delays we're going to have traffic in that part of the county are going to be significant. And that's the point. One broken down or abandoned vehicle on the boundary roads can paralyze traffic for miles around the event. Residents of the Avalon Woods community, as you know, we're only 540 feet from the main entrance. Lawson Road, about 200 from the entrance, would be very close to nearly 10,000 vehicles per day with the event. And they're concerned that, as I said before, about school buses, police, fire, and so forth. I don't need to go on with that. We'd really prefer that the council not approve this application. If approved, we feel council must attach strict conditions to the approval. We suggest that there be a limitation on the number of attendees. I know the applicant would prefer not to see that. He's already indicated that he doesn't expect at least initially 25,000, but he chases the idea that anyone would say that there should be any limit on it. So from his perspective, let it go to the sky, even though it may not be appropriate for that location. No entrances and exits for attendee traffic should be permitted on Avalon and Lawson roads. I know he's specifying that on two of the roads. It says that Lawson will really only have light use when bringing in the stages and so forth. Let's keep in mind, though, that Lawson Road is a tar and chip road. It's very narrow. He gets those flatbed trucks on it. Again, nothing else passes on that road because of the width of the trucks. Maybe a car, but if you have a larger vehicle, it won't go. No other trucks. And the wear and tear on that road is likely to be more significant due to the nature of that truck traffic. It's more than an occasional farm vehicle going down that road. Make applicant bear the cost of all related DLDOT recommended road improvements. We'd anticipate that Hollyville Road will require additional paved shoulders and turn lanes to make it effective. If they don't, the situation that I described as crossing traffic is just going to make it impossible to pass. And by the way, about may say, well, this is only for a couple of days. We can say, well, this will only be for a short time during the year. If you're the one that needs the services that can't get through on those 3 or 4 or 5 days, somebody else is speaking for me, but if you have an emergency and you're impacted by this, it doesn't matter whether it's 3 or 4 or 5 days. That's an artery that's been shut down for which you suffer personal damage or, God forbid, death. Make the applicant responsible for police emergency public safety costs that affect residents on boundary roads. This is beyond the security that he's talking about, which I think was alluded to. Who makes sure that the entrances to Avalon Woods, that the access to people on the Lawson Road, and even along Hollyville Road, down Harmon Hill Road or Zor Road, are maintained? Or aren't they maintained? Is it just tough luck? We got the event going on, and good luck getting into and out of your house, homes or properties. I'd hope that wouldn't be the case. And as we said earlier, we'd like to see that you put some restrictions on the setup and takedown times. We're proposing that maybe they would be limited to something like 4 days. Final thing, and this is consistent with what's been said before, we'd also recommend that the applicant be required to provide a $10 million bond for each of the just listed conditions, both to ensure that the conditions are met, that he has some motivation to do what he says he's going to do, and also to assure that the residents could be compensated for in the event that there is any direct and or consequential damages related to the event. I hope you'll take these remarks into your consideration, take them seriously. They are concerns. Every time I brought this up or had somebody come to me about it, they have seriously expressed their fear. Number one, not about noise, number one, fear about their personal safety. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I believe, ma'am, you wanted to come up.
Did Deborah Sundberg, 27036, Running Deer Alley. Our home is bordered by the Baker Farm on the east side and on the south side. There are other people here in this audience also that their homes are bordered by the Baker Farm. Our concerns are, my concern today is, there's a lot of people coming. It's hot out there. It's very hot, and our land is encompassed. Our home is encompassed by over 95% trees, all types you can think of. So it should be cool. It's very hot. I listen to the numbers. I hear them again. I see them in the papers. There's going to be a lot of people there. What will they be doing between 4:30 in the morning and the time that the festivities start? They'll be riding bikes. They'll be going for walks. A lot of campers today can pull a small vehicle. What will they be doing? You can't tell me you're going to put those people in there like a herd of cows and put a fence around them and tell them they can't go anywhere. That's all I got to say for today. Thank you very, very much. You have a good day. You have a good decision to make.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak in opposition, sir? And again, just ask that any comments avoid being repetitive, as we've heard quite a bit already, and it's okay to say, I agree with so-and-so. That's what you wish.
Good afternoon. My name's Bill Ryan, and I live in Independence as well, 23758 Samuel Adams Circle. I'm a seventh-generation Delawarean. Returned to the state in 2010. I did have a hiatus with work for about 40 years. And several of my relatives are buried out back here at Union Cemetery. So I take this very seriously. This state is very dear to me. And what you need to know where I came from is I managed an organization that generated about $100 million in revenue. And I managed the sales organization behind it and relocated five times for that. I'm back home now. And right now, my grandsons are visiting, and they're enjoying the peacefulness of Delaware. I'd like to just ask a couple of questions because I'm not sure what benefit the county is receiving if we pass this. I've heard what the applicant's going to receive. I'm not sure what we're going to receive or what you're going to receive in the county. I can tell you what we give you in Independence. We give ourselves. If we continue to develop the 200 homes that Shaw Brothers has proposed, there'll be an extra $70 million in revenue. That's closing costs, moving costs, relocation. In addition to that, we usually only have two people per home. We're seniors. We're over 55. Our children are grown. We're going to pay the school taxes as we should. We want to. We want Delawareans to be educated. But we're not going to add to that. We're just going to give back to it. In addition to that, I would say that over a 12-month period, our residents are going to eat out 2 to 3 times a week. And by the way, we're all full-time, with very little exception. And we're going to eat out 2 or 3 times a week. And that's going to generate about $480,000 worth of meals. That should perk up the applicant. Now, essentially, in addition to that, we estimated about $7,000 per year per family for food and clothing. That's going to be spent locally. That's going to drive revenue. That gets into mercantile tax. That comes back somewhere. And you have property taxes. With the additional 200 homes, you're looking at about $300,000 a year in additional income. If you go back and look at the 180 homes that are already built, that's not included. That's the bonus. So I guess what I submit to the group is, when we take a look at the benefits that community development provides, it far outweighs what could possibly happen in a very limited amount of entertainment. And I love music, but I'm willing to travel to Harrington to go listen to it. And I'd say to you that I think most of the people here would too. And One other point is, when it comes to cost, and I know Nate just gave you a lot of information on roadways. If we were to do this, we would have to expand the roads. I mean, have to expand the roads. And if we did that, according to the Federal Highway Administration, that's $1.6 million per mile. By the way, that's 2006 figures. So if you were to increase the width of the road by one lane from Hollyville Road to Route 13, going past Raceway, it costs you $15.4 million for one lane. That does not include land acquisition or signals or traffic control patterns at all. Just land or just construction based on 2006 numbers. If you were to go come from Route 1 and or Five Points and cut over to Route 23 to Hollyville Road, you're looking at a 9.5-mile stretch, which is another $15.2 million per lane. Now, if you made those two lanes, it would be $61.2 million. I don't think the state has that right now. They're concerned with 495. But I also think the federal government is not going to contribute at this point either, because they're looking for other ways to increase revenue. So I said, the sensible process here is to simply say no. It's not the right venue for us at this point. Delaware is a beautiful state. Delaware has the seashore. People come here all summer. And I think it was brought up several times that Route 24 is congested enough. Add another 5 or 10 or 20,000 cars to that in either direction, it would be a shame. I just can't imagine 20,000 people coming through this roundout here in town. That would create a real problem for everybody. But folks, I'm very grateful for your service. I certainly have a lot of appreciation for your patience. We can be long-winded, and I know you'll do the right thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here in opposition who would like to speak?
Keep them coming. Come on down.
I would like to say before you start that this has been one of the most congenial crowds of folks of opposition that we've had in a long time. It's a great compliment to everyone in this room.
Well, I'll be happy to change that if that's what you prefer.
He'd like you to change it.
Until then.
Anyway, good afternoon, and maybe I should say good evening. My name is Bill Oliva, and I reside at 30202 Zachary Taylor Court in Millsboro, which is about 5 minutes or a mile from the proposed venue. I've spent 30 years in the financial services industry, a large part of that funding real estate and mortgages. And I also spent time as a public sector servant, as an appointed commissioner, and helped draft both legislation as well as regulations for land use. I think that we, the people of Sussex County, and you as our representatives, owe the applicant a correct and also a timely decision. He doesn't need uncertainty caused by indecision. It's certainly not what any entrepreneur wants, and he is certainly a top-notch entrepreneur. Therefore, the best action for you, the council, to take is on CU 1991, is to vote no and do it in a timely manner. Now would be fine. No is a good decision for both the applicant and the many county residents whose way of life is really being threatened by CU 1991. And in my view, it's the only decision that the council should take. First, state law requires that all zoning regulations be in accordance with the comprehensive plan, your comprehensive plan. Title IX of the Delaware Code, section 6959, states that the land use maps forming part of the comprehensive plan have the force of law, and no development shall occur except in conformity with the land use maps. Much of the surrounding area consists of residential developments, and a proposed outdoor entertainment facility is not residential or agricultural in nature, for that matter, but it's a commercial venture designed for transient event guests to the area, not for residents. This council's comprehensive plan states that the primary uses envisioned in low-density areas are agricultural activities and single-family detached homes. Business development should be largely confined to businesses addressing the needs of these two, ag and single-family homes. The focus of retail and other uses in low-density areas should be providing convenience goods and services to nearby residents. CU 1991 does not address the needs of agriculture, and arguably would compromise productive agricultural land the equivalent of a square mile. CU 1991 does not provide convenience goods and services to nearby residents. In fact, CU 1991 does absolutely nothing for the benefit of nearby residents. Therefore, CU 1991 clearly does not conform to the comprehensive plan, and such, I can only recommend that the council deny this application. And by the way, as soon as you do, the then former applicant will simply switch venues to Harrington, operate his concert series without missing a beat. The faster you vote no, the sooner he can get to work on booking entertainment, marketing's proposed concert series in Harrington. I think we owe him all that much. Second, let's say for some reason that the comprehensive plan is modified or the council decides that nonconformance with the plan is fine. What is the real end game? To me, it strains credibility to think that someone with the breadth and magnitude of the applicant's operation would go through all this brain damage and potentially incur significant costs just for a few concerts, particularly as he has an alternate location in hand, as he has stated publicly, as have a number of other people stated today as well. In fact, as we know, the alternate venue in Harrington has in place the infrastructure and other capabilities to operate events of this nature envisioned by the applicant. And by the way, Harrington is still in Delaware. There'll still be local jobs. Delaware could still be considered a venue for country western music. I did notice in the comments that it was the focus on Delaware, which is absolutely fine with me, but not Sussex County. By the way, I've also noticed in the comments made by the many residents that would be severely affected by CU 1991, that now one of them stated that they have second homes, which they can move and continue on should you make an adverse decision. By the way, you guys have a lot of, you have second homes that you're going to move to?
No.
No? Okay. So you think this is a series of oversights, or in fact that they don't have second homes, unlike the applicant who has a second venue? I can tell you that unlike the applicant, I have no plan B regarding my residence. Now, since the applicant has a second venue, which is far better suited, why the Baker Farm? Some questions have been asked, and it should be asked, is Punkin' Chunkin' next? Well, the answer today is no. Of course the answer today is no. What about tomorrow? Will the next request by the applicant be for a change in zoning to commercial use? It's not that big a leap. How much would that negatively impact land values in the area, allowing properties to be purchased at a fraction of their current values to develop commercial businesses, potentially? Besides being contrary to the comprehensive plan, to me this entire application makes no sense on its face without a far more aggressive endgame, and an endgame which is potentially a lot scarier than CU 1991. So for all of these reasons, I really recommend that you vote no on this application. Thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else here in opposition who wishes to speak about the application? Come on down.
Hello, thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Nikki Zangwill. I reside at 29738 Oliver Walcott Drive, Millsboro. I live in Independence. Just a quick background. I spent more than 32 years professionally as a contracting officer for the federal government. So, and as a retiree, I was a consultant to contractors for the federal government. I have continued to use my expertise to review legal documents, and my primary thrust is to ensure that anytime a proposal is going forth, that it is clear, concise, and completely unambiguous, leading to a good receipt for a contract that would result in the same type of an instrument. I'm not going to continue to speak on things that have already been addressed today, because there have been a lot of people here with credentials that far exceed mine in matters of environmental issues and such. But I would like to mention a couple of things that I still have concerns about after having reviewed the documents that I've seen so far. And I will tell you that I employed statements that my teachers taught me when I would speak with my employees, which was, there is never a stupid question. So the first thing that I saw was, in looking at Mr. Pyrie's original package and the rendering A, version 8, there's a reference to water stations, BRS, and FV. I know what a water station is, but I have yet to find anybody who can tell me what a BRS or FV is. So if any of you know what that is, I would be more than glad to hear its explanation. Otherwise, I would like it to be forthcoming from Mr. Paris at some point in the future.
What is this? What's that acronym again?
If you look at the
just, go ahead and say
BRS,
BRS
and FV, those were designations on that rendering A, version 8, that were part of his initial package.
Okay,
don't know what it is. Full disclosure of anything is tantamount. And in fact, one of the gentlemen that spoke before me today alluded to the same thing, that he also still has concerns because he, as well as myself, believe that perhaps this application and its possible approval is going to be somewhat premature in that there are many things that are still yet unclear, haven't been presented to us. Mr. Pyrie himself and Mr. Baker said that they have not gone to the extent of having all of the sites thrown out and that sort of thing. They weren't going to do it until after such approvals were in place. Well, I think that's kind of like putting the cart before the horse instead of the other way around. So with regard to the second venue that Mr. Pyrie talked about today, I would just tell you that his lease allows for him to have, you know, any number of uses, one of which, of course, is a circus. I know there's a nice long list of proposed voluntary conditions, but as someone has already pointed out, they can go away. I mean, they're voluntary, so there's nothing that would cause Mr. Pyrie to honor those, unless those restrictions are put in place. If you have a circus, we have another whole set of issues. There's going to be timber cleared one way or another, whether apparently Mr. Pyrie does it or Mr. Baker does it as part of his farming. It sounds to me like there's going to be timber cleared and logged. But in the instance where we might have a circus today or tomorrow, years down the road, you've got animal waste in addition to human waste, and you have odor, that there will be no barriers, no natural barriers for. And as I understand it, the noise level is going to go up because the natural barriers that all of that lumber and timber on the land provides are going to be gone. So erosion, noise, all of that's going to be impacted for a long period of time. Somebody else mentioned that there was a concern about the fact that it's not too big of a leap to think that if we get this sort of conditional use in place, there could be a possibility of a request for commercial rezoning at some point in the future. There is a portion of the lease that does allow for assignment. Now, of course, that assignment of the lease or the sublease, transfer of its ownership, interest or voting control of Highway 1 and its partnership does require the lessor's written consent. But that's because an assignment would be more than 49% of the holdings. Mr. Pyrie has the ability to go forward for at least up to 49% without the lessor's written consent. So when you see that much possible redirection of ownership interest or voting control by the tenant, of the tenant, before that action is deemed to be an assignment, it does give me pause to think that that much influence could then have a direct bearing on what the Bakers would do in the future in possibly granting an assignment and giving up that additional control. So those are the types of things that I have a concern about. Let me just see if there was anything else. People have already, covered expansion, so I'm not going to go back into that. You did ask earlier today if Mr. Pyrus would be okay with having this revisited in 3 years. Current lease is 2 years. So as I conclude, I'm going to ask that you deny this application because I think it's in the best interest of the residents of this county, and I don't believe that the current application is consistent with the comprehensive plan. We require it to be modified. If, however, you decide not to disapprove this, I would ask that you revisit it in at least 2 years, not three.
Thank you for pointing that out.
And I did sign it, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak in opposition to this application?
My name is Vincent Wilson. I'm a resident of Independence, 23796 Samuel Adams Circle. It was mentioned earlier we could just cast a vote whether we agree with someone or not. And I'd like to say that I agree with the applicant. I agree with the applicant, Plan B, which was Harrington. I think it's more suitable. Thank you.
Is there anyone else here?
In the back, she's coming.
Oh.
She's on the way.
Got a camera in my way.
Good quick.
She's
on.
Thank you.
She's on the way.
Thank you, Mr. President.
My name is Margaret Falk, and I live at 27331 Martins Farm Road, and I'll sign this after. But I would like to address what Mr. Baker said. Last meeting before the committee, I addressed what the applicant said, but now I question Mr. Baker. I can't imagine a farmer. Now, he says he's only owned it for 12 years. I've owned my farm for 35 years. I cannot imagine a farmer wanting this to happen to his land. And then he really gave us the impression, I think, that, oh, this isn't going to change anything about my farmland. It's not going to change a thing. Well, it's going to be hundreds of trucks coming in there with gravel. Lots of roads to get those campers in. Every campsite's going to have gravel in order that they don't get stuck if it rains. It's going to be gravel everywhere. You don't turn that back into farmland. You can't plant corn early enough to take it off before August. You can't plant soybeans late enough to put them in after August. I can't think of anything you could possibly put in there to change it back to farmland, period. I mean, what it's going to look like is after he said it's going to take forever to put fence up, it's going to take forever to go around this whole thing with fence. Yeah, and a lot of trucks and a lot of noise for months and months to put the fence up, probably months and months to get it down. And then what are you going to be looking at? What are these people going to be looking at? They're not going to be looking at a pristine soybean field. They're not going to be looking at a beautiful cornfield. You know what they're going to be looking at? They're going to be looking at gravel here, gravel there, weeds here, weeds there, and probably nobody to even mow it. I even mow my pastures to make it look beautiful all the time. I can't imagine a farmer, really a true farmer, even one with horses, which I have, and which would really be disturbed by the generators that are going to be running. I mean, they're not permanent campsites with electric. Every camper's going to have a generator running all night long to keep cool. Every single one of them's going to be making noise 24 hours a day for maybe more than 6 days, because he keeps saying it's better if they stay longer. I don't think it's better if they stay longer. I think it's worse if they stay longer. That's just common sense. But I'm talking generators on every single motorhome. I camp. I show horses, so I camp at horse shows. Okay? And I know nobody wants to be stuck there. I can take my truck off. I have a fifth wheel, but I can take it off, drive my truck away. Okay? And I can go to a local restaurant. I can go somewhere. These people aren't going to stay there and eat hot dogs all week for 6 days. I mean, it's common sense. They're not going to eat hot dogs every day. They're going to say, oh, boy, I heard about this really good seafood restaurant. I heard about Bethany Blues down Route 1. Let's all go down to Route 1. And believe me, when people are paying high camper fees, and I know this from Sturgis, and I know this from Buffalo Chip, when these people are paying these high camper fees and these high entertainment fees, and believe me, that's what it's going to end up like, because Buffalo Chip is a prime example. It only happens once a year, but when it happens, believe me, it happens, and anything goes, and I won't even stay there. Camper or not, I won't even stay at Buffalo Chip. That's how bad it gets. Entertainment, you know, it doesn't end when the music stops. That doesn't end it. And if you don't think that when these people pay these high camper fees and these high entertainment fees, they're not going to push every single person into that vehicle they can possibly get in. It's going to be every camper that's designed to sleep four is suddenly going to be sleeping 8 to 12 in the same camper. That's going to happen. And what about runoff groundwater? You know, brown water is kept separate from sewage water in a camper. Your sewage is one line. Your brown water, they call it brown water, is a different line.
What they said, what, I heard gray water.
Gray water, brown water. Okay. You can let that out. Now, Mr. Baker said, oh, look at all the water that goes on the corn. That's all clean water. And guess what? It goes down in the ground as clean water, too, after it waters the corn. That other water isn't going back down into the water as clean water because it doesn't come into it as clean water. Now, I know that this guy did a fantastic job on the environmental, but I just want to say there's a lot more that's going on here than has been really presented. And I just want you guys to think, and women, I just want you all to think common sense. Look at these people out there. They bought this land. They paid a lot of money for it. They want to be in a rural area. They don't want to drive past here after the fences come down and see nothing but gravel and weeds, gravel and weeds. And do we want to do that to our beautiful farmland? I love farmland. I hate to go down a country road. I hate to go down a country road and see a horrible eyesore right in the middle of a beautiful farm. I hope you all feel that way.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else?
That's a good way to end.
Anyone else?
Okay, hearing no further. You can hold your applause.
We don't need your applause, thank you very much.
Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak in opposition? Hearing none. Mr. President, I do note we do have a representative from DelDOT. I don't know if he wishes to speak, but I do remember that he did speak at the commission meeting. So,
sure. I'd like to hear him speak.
Either one of you or both of you or sure.
Yeah, I'm Michael Rivera with DelDOT in the traffic safety section, the special events manager. Huh? So if you guys had questions about any of the logistics, I just wanted to clarify one thing. We had a preliminary meeting with Mr. Pyrus, and nothing has been approved. You know, in theory, we can do what we can manage the event if we have to, but we haven't approved anything officially. Okay. Do you have any questions about
the question to council?
You've basically just have listened to his application, and you really didn't give any comments like we normally get from DelDOT when we see applications.
We have some of the same concerns that have been addressed here today. Pending approval from the council, if it's our job to manage it, that's what we're going to do.
Have to do it.
Any questions of council?
You say you can handle it. I don't have any idea how you could do that.
We work with the organizer, with DSP, with DENREC,
okay,
to develop a traffic control plan.
Gotcha. I understand now. It is just all a temporary situation to deal with the inflow and outflow.
That's correct.
What you're saying. Okay.
Are you satisfied with the number of entrances that are presented?
We'd have to examine that further, and that would also go through a different section in Dowlap for entrance permits. We'd have to discuss the size, how many vehicles we could fit in and out, things like that.
Do you have the authority to require more entrances?
The authority? That's a slippery slope. Title 17 gives us authority to regulate a lot of things. Once they're on private property, it becomes a little harder for us to dictate their means. So
I have a feeling that we have the authority. Are you going to be able to tell us the number of entrances that you'd be comfortable with prior
yes.
to
how long? We can analyze that. And
when could you have that information ready?
Probably in a couple of days if you needed that.
I think you should work on it.
Sure.
Do you think there'd be other improvements that may be required? Can you imagine requiring the developer to...
It would be nice to do that, but I can't see that being done in the time frame, of this event. Yes, if we had two-lane roads in each direction with 10-foot shoulders and bike lanes and everything, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
We don't have that infrastructure.
It's not expected to take place for another year.
Yeah. There's no way that they could... that the state and DELDOC could put together something like that for August 15. There's no way they can do a widening project of that scope in that time.
Mm-hmm. Is there a concept of bringing vehicles off the road and kind of putting them in a corral, so to speak?
That's what we'll be required. Okay. Similar to Firefly, stacking and queuing vehicles and RVs would have to be done in the field to try to eliminate that queuing on the roadway.
Mm-hmm.
How many entrances did Firefly have?
Firefly used actually only two entrances, but they had 56 queuing lanes within there with Lot 1 in Dover. So mm-hmm. they had an enormous amount of space, similar to this.
two entrances?
Mm-hmm.
Correct, two entrances. Two different access points, but different types of classifications of road.
Well, that's encouraging. Okay.
Those entrances, I wonder if DELDOT's going to say that they'll have to be widened and paved and made in extra lanes. These are big vehicles coming
correct.
In.
They will have to be stabilized entrances, and someone from design would
it
determine
mm-hmm.
the width of that. It would have to be able to accommodate, vehicles coming and going.
Right.
Yes,
okay.
At least two vehicles at a time into that facility.
It's very nice to have somebody from DELDOT here. I appreciate it.
Glad we can be here.
And we're quite, I'm sorry, we're still cold.
How many meetings have you had so far on this project?
I believe we've only had one meeting.
Just one.
Mr. Pires, to discuss preliminary plans for that. And as I said, in the meeting, it was determined that we've managed traffic for events like this. Is what we do.
Well, I can understand where your lack of information is, because if you only had one meeting, you really haven't been able to get into it enough to really give
right.
us any real advice on some of the questions we're probably having.
Correct. And from the left side, I mean, if this isn't approved, then this is a moot point.
Right. Right?
You know, so instead of if you're requesting us to do additional investigation as to how we can bring traffic in there, then we're willing to do that. But at this point, without a decision, we didn't do a lot of.
Of course.
Because we have a guest.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Cole?
No. I just think I
can.
I guess I would just like to ask the chair if that's appropriate, and could we encourage DELDOT to look at this in a serious light so that we have that information mm-hmm. prior to.
We can do that. Thank you, sir. That was
okay, so you would like us to examine, could you be more specific about what it is you want?
Well, we'll wait to the end when we'll, shouldn't we add it at the end when we make make some requests before we close the record, and we leave the record open
you
for
can,
additional
you can
things.
Leave it, you can leave it for a specific purpose
sure.
if you wish
okay.
for that.
I think, instead of shooting from the hip right now, let's just wait at the end here.
I move that we leave the record open.
Well, we're not done yet, I don't think, chat, but asking questions.
Do you have more questions?
I've got some more questions. I've got a question to Mr. Lank.
Sorry.
Sir. Okay, I'm done with you, sir. Mr. Lang, I got a couple questions. What would be the involvement of Soil Conservation District in an application such as this?
Any application required approval of the Sussex Conservation District for stormwater management, erosion, and sediment control.
Okay, but there's, my understanding is there's very few structures being...
They would still have to review the site plan, because you're talking about a large parking facility for campers and automobiles.
Right.
That would have...
Even if they weren't pushing any dirt? If they're just driving over and parking the stuff on top?
We would have to at least have a letter of no objection from the conservation.
Okay, so it will be reviewed by them. Okay, second thing would be... when I go by Dover and they're having a big event up there, I see all these surrounding farm fields with campers, and you know, it seems like adjoining property owners have been given some type of special permit to be able to utilize their land for, say, the NASCAR events and stuff like this. Is there any mechanism for surrounding property owners of this event to be able to benefit from if something like this was coming?
This is a specific application for a specific site for a conditional use for this purpose.
So a farmer across the street who had some vacant land would have to make an application for
a parking facility or something of that nature.
Could they walk into you and ask, like Mr. Pryor, you said you could have come in and gotten a 3-day event. Mm-hmm. Could an adjoining landowner say, I want a 3-day?
Not permitted.
Okay.
It has to be the Board of Adjustment for an off-site parking.
All right, thank you. And let me see, I got another one here. Oh, in your opinion, does this application comply with the Sussex County Land Use Plan? This is the agricultural district, and I've always understood that certain activities need to benefit agriculture.
The comprehensive plan makes reference to this site as being a low-density area. Low-density area is referenced into the zoning ordinance, which is AR1 Agriculture Residential. The AR Agriculture Residential District allows for certain conditional uses. Mm-hmm. This is one.
Yeah, it is one.
So it's not a listed commercial activity. It's a listed conditional use.
So even though I've always understood it, but those uses had to somehow have an agricultural benefit to them.
They have the right to apply for this type of use based on the conditional use listing.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all, Mr. President.
Mr. Phillips, you have any questions?
Would it be appropriate now to make a motion asking DelDOT to provide us additional information in a timely manner?
Oh, Mr. Phillips, at this point, we can close the record and leave it open for that specific purpose if that's what you wish. Council would still have to wait for planning and zoning's recommendation as well.
I'd like to do that.
As soon as planning and zoning may be making the recommendation, is it on this Thursday's agenda?
I don't have that agenda in front of me.
I'd like them to have this too. DelDOT information too.
Their record's closed.
Their record's closed, I think.
Could I ask the DelDOT gentleman? Because you have that information ready for us in a week.
I believe we can. Yeah, I believe we can have a recommendation as to what we would want to require of the organizer to safely move traffic in and out of that venue.
All right. Well, how about next Tuesday's day meeting? We invite you back to provide us a report.
That should be fine, sir.
Before we have a motion, Mr. Cole, you had something else?
Yeah, there was reference to... I believe the farm we're talking about has an ag exemption, so there's no property taxes being paid. If this use gets approved, Todd, is there any impact on the county tax base? Would the county look at this property any differently because of this event? Or is it still ag land exempt?
George?
I'm asking Todd.
Mr. Cole has the floor.
The first question about the tax situation is only because it's in farmland preservation and that there's tax exemptions there for transfer tax reasons only. As far as the condition of the property as it relates to this conditional use and would it affect the taxes after that's approved? No, I wouldn't have any.
It still has the ag exemption. Okay.
Well,
okay.
Right.
Not certain that we know that right sitting here right now what the condition of the ag land preservation would be as a result of this conditional use.
Doesn't any ag land in Sussex County don't they have any farm have the ability to come in and ask and be ag lands exempt?
Yes.
Whether you're in a farmland preservation or not. Just yes. Farmland is exempt. So this, my exactly. Understanding, this is exempted land, whether it's farmland preservation or not.
Yeah.
But with this use approved, would they still be exempt? Okay, that's all right.
But I would need more information in front of me to provide that answer. We don't have that in the record right now.
Okay.
Can I give my opinion?
No,
this is not permanent.
No, I don't want opinion. No, that's okay.
Is this right?
Should we clarify?
I just asked it.
I don't have the answer to your question, but
you're fine.
That's okay. I don't need his opinion. He gave me the.
That's all I wanted.
It's not in farmland preservation.
It's not.
No, I didn't say that. It didn't matter. I'm just asking. I know what I asked. Go on. We're okay.
We're okay.
I'm okay. I know what I asked, and I think Todd knows what I asked. Sam, not sure what I asked.
Okay. Any more questions of council?
It brings me back to where I used to live in Annapolis on June week. People would rent their houses out to get the heck out of town. And that was it worked out very well. All the midshipmen, the midshipmen's families stayed in rented houses right around the area, Naval Academy. So, but I don't think, we can do the same thing. There's no reason, nothing prohibiting us from doing that. Our neighbors, right?
What are you talking about? People
renting
rent their
out the houses during the concert.
No, you're right. That's right. That's a good idea, Mrs. Deaver.
Any more questions? Any more questions to council? Hearing none. Mr. Phillips, you had a motion you want to make?
I'd like to see that we ask Del Dot to move forward with providing greater detail to a traffic ingress and egress plan and invite them to return next Tuesday to make a presentation.
Is that a motion?
And leave the public record open for that purpose?
For that limited purpose only. So there would be no further public comment other
Correct.
Than that,
right.
Than what is to be presented by Del Dot next week.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it. Mm-hmm.
Second, Mrs. Deaver.
Good idea.
Any questions on that motion? We're going to leave public comment open for only this specific purpose, which is an answer from Del Dot next Tuesday.
Yeah, closing the hearing. Are you closing the hearing portion of this public?
And we'll.
We have no more.
Any questions on that?
The public hearing of the portion is now closed except for the Del Dot.
That's correct.
Comments next week.
Correct. We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Well, yes, motion carried. Now I need a motion to defer.
I'll make that motion.
Correct?
Yes.
Defer. Defer.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Second, Mr. Cole, to defer. Until we have the results from planning and zoning.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Or Mr. President, we need to wait until we hear the recommendations from Planning and Zoning Commission.
Any questions on that motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. We're all done. Can a motion to adjourn? Motion, Mr. Phillips. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson? Yes, motion carried. We're now adjourned. Thank you very much.